Hi everyone, welcome to Advanced Video Classroom. And today we are continuing our science article on Huntington's disease that we started yesterday. And to discuss this with me in our studio today, I have
Pam
and Josh.
And I'm Linda. And, you know, this is a very serious subject. We see that under the title, Scientist Tackles Huntington's Disease, it says, discover how one man is facing this tragic disease. So we're taking a look at a man named Jeff Carroll, and he actually has this debilitating disease, or this disease that, you know, really reduces you to being unable to speak or move, and what he is doing in his research. So Pam, what, yesterday was, We learned a lot, but it was also very helpful.
Right. Yesterday, the lesson provided us a lot of great background information, a lot of good vocabulary. But for me, I always like to try to simplify things. It helps me remember easier. So I found a very easy, a very simple definition for the disease. And what I found is that it's a hereditary brain disease. It's something that is passed on from one or both of the parents. It is progressive and it's degenerative. In other words, it gradually gets worse. It's incurable.
Mm-hmm. And what stood out to you about our article yesterday, Josh?
Well, I think his reaction to having the disease, not just when he found out for sure that he was diagnosed with the gene that he got from his mother, but also along the course of his life, just, you know, experiencing some fear and being scared of what his own personal journey with the disease is going to be like, but not letting that really get in the way of him really going after a very productive life, and not just in the realm of going after trying to work with this disease, understand it, and help people develop ways in order to maybe reduce the impact on people, but also to have just a full life in his own right.
Right, and we're going to be reading more about that today. I think he is very inspiring. In no matter what we're facing in our lives, we can run away from it or we can face it and see if there's something that we can do. And he became a neuroscientist, which really is a study of the nerves, or the nervous system. And he gets money, you know, to help study, because this is a very, very expensive endeavor to find out and to try to understand a disease like this. So he has used his time with his family, but also in his research to provide more understanding. So today we're going to look a little bit more closely at what he has discovered, and it's kind of exciting, actually. And to me, it's provided some hope. I don't claim to understand even 50% of all of this, but I probably shouldn't be saying that, right? I mean, I can understand what the article is saying, but you know what all how debilitating this disease really
right.
is. So let's start by reading the article. We are on page 27 in your magazine. So if you have it, I think it would be helpful if you could turn to it, because it gets a little bit confusing. You really need to follow closely along, I think. And maybe if you have it on your phone or on a digital device, you might want to find it as we read. And we're going to be reading the left-hand column now.
Tricking the cells. It's a crazily exciting time in HD research, Carroll says. Gene silencing appears to be the most promising treatment on the horizon. Because Huntington's results from inheriting a defect in a specific gene, the idea behind gene silencing is to trick cells into shutting off the HD gene only. The first human clinical trials involving a drug that kills crucial messenger molecules to the HD gene are underway in England and Canada. Carroll's most recent work, the bulk of which is funded by an $800,000 grant, occurs in a university building in Bellingham, Washington. Despite Carroll's optimism about the human trials, he said he doesn't use the word cure about the cutting-edge research. It's an unrealistic target, he said. Instead, he hopes gene silencing can help prolong healthy lifespan, similar to the way HIV treatments have worked.
So I really like the title of this section. It's called Tricking the Cells. It doesn't mean that you are curing them, okay? You're trying to get them to do something that they wouldn't normally do by a little trick. And I love it that it comes out of science. So when I was saying I didn't understand 50% of that, this is the part I don't understand.
Right.
According to Carol, he thinks that it's a crazily exciting time because of something called gene silencing.
Right. Gene silencing is actually one of our specialized terms. If you want to look down the list and just look at the definition, it says that it's a mechanism by which a cell shuts down the expression of a certain gene. The method is being increasingly used in the fight against cancer and other diseases. I think basically what it means is they are trying to perfect the ability to shut down only certain genes and leave the others alone.
I think that sounds like a pretty good approximation of what they're going for here.
Mm-hmm. So they would shut the gene down that contains the Huntington disease's genetic defect, so it would not be passed on to him or to people. And it says that it appears to be the most promising treatment on the horizon. So that means, you know, the horizon, of course, is just like the edge of the earth, so what you can see ahead of you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it says because Huntington's results from inheriting a defect in the specific gene, the idea behind gene silencing is to trick cells into shutting off the HD gene only.
Right. In other words, they don't want to mess with or they don't want to alter any of the other genes in a person's body. But if they can figure out how to specifically target this one, they feel like this may offer some hope.
Right. And I think it's also very exciting here because, as we learned in the definition for the specialized term, this is something that could potentially work for more than just Huntington's disease, right? So there are many other ways in which genes can become damaged, mutated, and when they replicate themselves, they do it in a way that is destructive or harmful to the organism. And if it's possible to go in and figure out how to, like they said here, use drugs to kill crucial messenger molecules to those genes in question to stop them from activating, could potentially really solve a lot of problems, a lot of health problems that people have.
You know, for a drug to be tested, or a clinical trial to be tested on humans, means that it has to have evolved already quite a ways.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because they would never take a human and do initial testing of a drug on somebody. Usually it's gone through mice or something.
That's exactly right. So they're making actually pretty good progress on this. I thought the same thing, Linda, that they obviously have gone through several steps, many steps, before they've moved along to the human clinical trials. It's interesting, the writer tells us that it's only going on in England and Canada right now, so that means it's not to that stage in the U.S. at this point.
Mm-hmm. But you don't know who this... I think in these kind of testings, it doesn't have to occur in every country. So the findings of England and Canada, I know that the drug laws are different in different countries.
Certainly.
So, you know, we don't know what's been happening but in those countries, but we do see that this research is not just being done by him.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So eventually, you know, usually what happens is it's all put together and used for the common good.
Mm-hmm.
So we see that his most recent work, which has been, it says the bulk of which is funded by, that means the majority of the money that he's using for this recent work is from this $800,000 grant. And he is in Bellingham, Washington, which is north of Seattle.
Right. It's probably Western Washington University because I'd say it is a state university in Bellingham, but it's also a research university.
Okay. And we see that he's optimistic, but what else is he, Pam?
He says he doesn't use the word cure, so I would have to say he's optimistic, but he's also realistic about his diagnosis, but he has hope for the future.
Okay, and he's using this in terms of what he's calling cutting-edge research. And when we think of something of cutting edge, you know, usually we think of a knife, right?
Sure.
But when we're talking about science, what are we talking about?
So for science or technology, it means just like very, very modern and the most advanced.
Okay. So, yeah, this does seem very cutting edge. I mean, you know, even 10 years ago, you were not hearing in the field of science that you could shut down a specific gene in somebody's body.
That's
right.
True.
To keep something from advancing. And, I mean, it still hasn't totally happened, but if they are doing clinical trials on human beings, it is almost there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from everything that we know, right, they don't do this for 30 years.
Sure.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know.
Now, of course, just because they're doing clinical trials doesn't mean that they also have clinical successes, right?
Right.
It's a big step. And like you said, it's a long process. So the fact that they're there already means that they've got some very promising possibilities.
Yes.
But he himself even says he doesn't use the word cure because he feels it's an unrealistic target.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right. But he does say that he hopes that gene silencing will help prolong a healthy lifespan. Like HIV treatments have worked. You know, when HIV was very prominent in the news and, you know, we were reading about it all the time, there was no hope.
Right.
You know, and now it's totally different.
It is. I remember, so when HIV first became very, I don't want to say common, but I want to say there was a lot of research, there was a lot of exposure to the problem. It was kind of considered to be the sort of illness that would lead to, once you got into the full-blown part of it, a very quick decline.
That's right.
And rather quick death as well. So, but I know that that has changed substantially with the way they've been able to treat it, and they've really slowed down the decline so that people can live basically a very normal life for a long period of time.
Right. And that seems like what he is striving for here.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you are disabled, well, it's more than just disabled, you know, if you're incapacitated for these number of years, that's a very long time.
Right.
So he says that he hopes that it will work the similar way that HIV treatments have worked. So that is, right there, is providing a lot of hope for people, and I think for himself.
And I think he's saying he hopes gene silencing can help provide prolonged healthy lifespan. Mm. As you mentioned, an acquaintance yesterday, Linda, you knew someone who had it and spent a great part of her adult years in the bed. We say bedridden, BEDRIDDEN. He's hoping that they can help to provide better quality of life for people with the disease.
Right. And we talked about a lot of the symptoms that happen at the very beginning, what happens, and it's very, you know, the deterioration that happens. So I think he's trying to keep that at bay for a long period of time, longer
sure.
period of time.
Mm-hmm. Now, to be realistic, if you're talking about the difference between being bedridden and not being able to get out of bed and not being able to communicate and still having to be able to be in a wheelchair, but being able to be a little bit more independent and be able to communicate a little bit, that is a pretty substantial difference as far as quality of life goes, even though from the outside, it still seems very difficult.
Right.
Right. But here we're talking about, without anything happening, it says that people are trapped in their bodies, and they know that they're deteriorating, but they can't communicate anything.
Right.
Very frightening.
Yes. So we see that he is a triple threat, according to the doctor that he works with, Dr. Ed Wild, that he works with. So let's read the next two sections in the right-hand column at the top of page 27.
Triple threat. Carol's work beyond the lab leads Wild to call him a triple threat. He's also an educator. He's on a quest to take every cool piece of Huntington's disease research and make it accessible to the families affected by HD, Wild said. And he's an advocate. A healthy balance. But Carol balances work with his family, which includes 11-year-old twins Billy and Elijah. They were conceived through a process that combines genetic screening with in vitro fertilization. Through this, Carol and his wife were assured that two cultured embryos were free of the mutated gene. It's a wonderful thing to have kids who are not at risk for genetic disease, he said.
So his associate, which we've said before, Dr. Ed Wild, that works with him, calls him a triple threat. And I hope that he means it in a good way here, doesn't he, Pam?
That's right. I think that the first aspect of Carol's life and work is that he is a research scientist. So that's the first thing that we've learned about him. But Wild goes on to tell us he's also an educator. And one thing I learned about Carol is that he is using social media to put out as much information as he can specifically to these families whose family members are suffering from the disease.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So what is he doing?
He has some type of network that he is able to share a lot of information with the families.
Oh, interesting. And so we see that he's an educator, and it says that he's on a quest to take every cool piece of research and make it accessible to these families. This is a phrase we say, somebody's on a quest. If you're on a quest for something, what are you doing?
Well, the first thing I think of is the quest for the Holy Grail. So this is the legend of King Arthur, right?
Mm-hmm.
And his knights who went out on a quest in order to find the chalice of the Last Supper, right? And so this is a sort of looking for maybe a wondrous or a magical item at the end of a journey that will really help solve your problems.
Okay. So here, here the quest is really to share, okay, and this wonderful, research that he's finding, and hopefully it will be helpful to people. And I think a lot of this, even though people can't access it and use it, it's to give them hope.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, and hopefully sometimes by changing your mindset, you know, your quality of life improves.
That's right. And I really enjoyed learning this about him. He is a research scientist, and you would think he could be a nerdy guy who's just kind of focused on the research, the experiments, the results. But no, he also is very actively sharing and enthusiastically sharing all the information he can to help bolster the spirits, keep lifting the spirits of these family members.
And it also helps that he's an advocate. So we see he's an educator and an advocate, and he's an advocate for what?
So he's an advocate for people who are suffering from this disease and their families. So advocate is somebody who defends, or is somebody who really talks about the rights or the issues that certain people are facing.
Well, I think that definition certainly fits Jeff Carroll, because really that is kind of the purpose of why he even started doing this,
right?
To understand it for himself, because he himself has this disease, but also to, you know, spread it and to help give hope to others as well. But, as you said, he's not just focused on his research, but he has a healthy balance. And I think that this is really this section right here was quite interesting. You would think that anybody with Huntington's disease, knowing that they had it, would, and we know that they found out before they had children, okay, that having children would be, like, out of the question for them. But what does it say here?
Well, we find out he is a family man. He's a dad. He has twins, Billy and Elijah, but he and his wife were very, very careful. Like you said, Linda, this is not something that you would go into blindly, but instead they decided to use a process called in vitro fertilization, and basically what that means is that the egg or eggs were fertilized outside of her womb. You can see the term under our specialized terms, and many women use this if they're unable to become pregnant the normal way. So this is a process that is used frequently, but at the same time, they used genetic screening to test and check the eggs to be sure that they did not carry the gene, the mutated gene.
Right. And it says they were conceived. This is a word that we commonly use when you're having a child. If a child is conceived, it means that the egg has become fertile in the woman, so she is now pregnant. Mm-hmm. And the noun of that is conception.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so they use this, and they use genetic screening. Genetic screening is so interesting now. They're doing a lot with this. And so you can see how far science has come.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. And so they were assured that two cultured embryos were free of the mutated gene. So we have another term here having to do with children or having children, and that is an embryo. And what is that, Josh?
So an embryo is actually, it's a state of development.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be for a human or an animal or a plant. It's a very early stage. And for humans, it would be then the early stage it's located in the womb would be the embryo.
Okay. Right. And here they've taken it out. They took the embryos out. Well, they took the egg out. So the embryos are once the babies start developing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he just says it's wonderful to have kids who are not at risk for genetic disease.
Can you imagine? I mean, we as parents, we all feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
When you give birth to healthy children, you are so thankful. Because
right.
So many things can go wrong. But with him knowing that he and all of his siblings have this problem, that his children were very much at risk, could have been very much at high risk.
Right. So let's continue on and read to the end of this article.
Well-established priorities. Carol has been courted by larger research institutions, but has chosen to stay in Bellingham largely for family and quality of life reasons, said his sister, Stacy. It's consistent with his DIY anti-establishment tendencies, she said. He's building his own lab at a regional university. Whenever he's particularly frustrated with work, Wild said, he thinks of Carol's determination and grace.
So we see here that Carol has, it says, well-established priorities. So sometimes we say he has his priorities set straight or his priorities are correct, which means that it's not just about the research, but he also has a balanced life.
Mm-hmm.
And the first sentence says he has been courted by larger research institutions. If you are courted by somebody, we usually don't use it in a sentence like this. We usually use it for what?
Well, in the past, mm-hmm. in the old days, we would say a young man would court a girl. He was trying to get her to become his girlfriend and eventually his wife. So he made grand gestures to convince her to like him. These research centers mostly were what they were. They were making grand gestures. They were making grand offers to try to get him to come with them to their university.
Right. So that means money.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And big research
facilities. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But what did he choose to do instead, Josh?
Well, he chose to stay in Bellingham, largely or mainly for family and quality of life reasons.
Right. And that's according to his sister, who, by the way, also has Huntington's disease.
Right.
And I think, you know, when you're facing a devastating disease like this, probably they're talking about support,
mm-hmm.
you know, support system for
sure.
one another.
Mm-hmm.
And they've lived there for a long time, so they enjoy the family and, you know, the people that are their support system that they have developed. And she says that it's also consistent with his do-it-yourself, this DIY, anti-establishment tendencies.
Right. He's not a normal kind of 9-to-5 career guy. This is what we've learned about Jeff Carroll. So she wasn't surprised to see him turn down all of these great offers. She said, no, instead, he wants to do it himself. He's building his own lab at a regional, in other words, a local university.
Right, in Bellingham, Washington, there is, we said, Western Washington State is located there. So I think it's a correct assumption to assume that it's at this university hospital where he's working. And then it ends with Wilde, not with Carol. It ends with Wilde saying that when he is particularly frustrated with work, he thinks of Carol's determination and grace. That's a good combination, determination and grace.
It is, and I would like to think that determination and grace will get you very far in life, right? As opposed to, like, determination and being a jerk.
when you see this word and grace here, I just thought it was kind of an interesting word that they used. But I think, you know, it has to come with a lot of understanding.
Right.
And acceptance.
So you can be gracious. You can use graciousness. That just means kind of thinking of others, putting others first.
Mm-hmm. Well, we hope that you have enjoyed this article. I think we on the panel feel that we learned a lot by reading it and discussing it, and we hope that we've helped shed light on some of the terminology and the situation with Huntington's disease, and we hope that you will join us again here on Advanced Studio Classroom. Bye for now.
Goodbye.